separation. And yeah, this is the title. Now we'll talk about dark energy and its perturbations and how they can affect the growth structures. And well, this is the overview. The work is based on this paper that I did with Victoria Rios. First, I would like a very short introduction about the acceleration of the universe and dark energy and modified gravity. And then I will talk about expansion history and growth history of the universe and how they can be used to infer the properties of dark energy. Then I will introduce the growth index, which is used to parameterize the growth history. And in the end, I will talk about entropy perturbations. And finally, the results. So there is this big problem in cosmology, which is the acceleration of the universe. We know that combining supernova type 1a data and the assumption that the universe must be homogeneous and isotropic on very large scales, we get this result that right now the universe is accelerating. We can write the metric in this way under this assumption. And these equations here, which are Einstein equations, tell us the evolution of the scale factor here. This is what tells us that there is an acceleration. And in order to solve these equations, we have to give a relationship between the pressure and the energy density of this fluid. And this is what makes us introduce dark energy, as we will see. Like, so in this plot, we basically have the dependence of the redshift with the distance of the supernova, and when we fit this curve, we get the acceleration. In this plot, we see that in fact the supernova data is crucial for this conclusion, because if we just use CMB and baryonic acoustic oscillations, which are the other two probes that we mainly have, this parameter here is not sufficiently constrained to conclude that there is some acceleration in the case of general relativity.
Well,
yes.
That's not true. I mean, because in the video, plus CMB by themselves give you multiple sigma protection that W is less than zero.
It's enough, you think.
I mean, it's not, it wouldn't be necessarily a couple of constants by the data, but it would certainly be accelerated. It has to be all has to be minus less than minus the field. And you're sorry. Zero is single. Oh, I don't know. More than two.
I think the thermal one is 68 and then 95.
Just the orange. I mean, if you just turn it like watch look where the green cuts off the orange.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be accelerated. Just the CMB plus Hubble. I mean, this is people always say this. This is, but I always get upset because even if you just take CMB plus the Hubble key project,
yeah,
you have evidence for acceleration. You don't. The supernovae are great and I wouldn't really want to discard them, but you don't need them.
But there is no Hubble key project.
I know it's not here, but yeah. I'm just saying. But in general,
mm-hmm. Okay. I always thought that. It was necessary. Perhaps it's because of that, because everybody keeps saying that.
Okay, sorry.
It's fine. So, what can we do to describe correctly or explain the acceleration? The simplest thing is just adding this cosmological constant there, which basically tells us that the pressure and its energy density are related through this equation. This is enough to describe the observations, but gives us lots of problems, first of all, because there's a lot of stuff in the universe which is made of this cosmological constant, very big amount of the total energy density, and we don't know what it is. Second, it's very small compared to what we would expect in comparison with what effective in theory will tell us. And finally, we have these coincident problems between quotes, which is that the relative abundance of matter and cosmological constants are the same order of magnitude today, and apparently there's not any good reason for that. because of these problems, and also perhaps because every time we have a problem, we tend to complicate things a little bit more. We have invented this dark energy, which is another possible description of acceleration, which includes the previous one, and then we just need to have an equation of a state like that. And even we can go a little bit further and complicate a little bit more and say that acceleration is not due to another component in the energy density of the universe, but due to a different theory of gravity, as we call it modified gravity, whatever it is. So instead of Einstein equations, we will have something like this. On the left-hand side of the dynamical equations. And with that, we can get rid of that energy and have for the universe field with matter. So there are, in this framework, basically two questions that we can ask. First of all is, what is it? Is it dark energy or modified gravity? What is causing the acceleration? And then, if we assume that it is dark energy, what is this dark energy? This is what I will mostly focus on. So how to distinguish between dark energy and modified gravity? We can see that it is not possible using the expansion history of the universe just to decide whether it is one or the other. Simple argument is simply that we have dark energy on the right hand side in the Einstein equations. We can just put it on the other side and then say that this is a new theory of gravity and we have the universe filled with matter. Of course, it is not just as simple as that, but it works. And in fact, what happens is that any expansion history given by the reciprocal of the Hall factor can be reproduced by choosing a sufficiently complicated equation of a state, which will be independent. This is just a formula that tells us that if you have H, there's a one-to-one correspondence if you want to figure out in the case of a universe which is filled with like energy component. So to solve this problem, apparently we cannot tell apart the two things. People thought that perhaps if we go to the level of perturbation theory, we can forget
it. So actually, can you go back to that?
Yes.
So it's not quite the one-to-one correspondence, but there's there's omega naught c, which you cannot really directly measure.
Here.
Yeah. So there could be a degeneracy basically between that and your c and omega.
But if you know h of theta,
and you have to know both h and omega naught.
Right.
Okay. It's just knowing h that gives that.
Yeah. Not only from that, but what I mean is that. Okay. Fixing the dark matter abundance, you can relate one to the other. Although there is a derivative here.
What's the meaning of C?
This is today. And this is C, sorry. This is the called that.
But that's not really an equation of state, exactly. I mean, it has the time explicitly in it. Somehow. It's not like the normal equation of state. It has something, it has Z in it, which is.
But that's what you call equation of the state. But that W.
Yeah.
I'm saying that it could have just had H prime and H, and that would be more sort of local in time.
But it is local in time.
How is it local in time? But doesn't that depend on when we set?
Right. I don't think
that's at the zero of time.
I don't think at the end. I think I dropped that at the end.
That
should drop, right? Yeah. Well, except for that omega naught c, which like they have to normalize it at some point. But yeah. I think W doesn't depend on when you set your time. It's your lecture to zero.
I think so, So we're saying we can go to the level of perturbations here and consider how these matter perturbations evolve in time. And the equation that describes that is this one here, in general relativity. And in order to study this equation, what you study uses this sort of factor. This is useful because if the universe is only filled with matter, so we take this thing, omega equal to 1, we can see that this is basically a constant for the derivative is 0. But in practice, what really happens is not just as simple as that. If we have dark energy, then there is a dependence with the scale factor or the residue. And this is just an example of what happens for the different values of the equation of the state. And a useful way of parametrizing that, the evolution of this growth factor is through the growth index, which can be defined by means of this integral, which relates the expansion history through the matter density to the growth history, which is here. And this is very useful because with a single parameter that plays a role similar to that of a spectral index, for instance, the spectral of primordial perturbations, we can test different theories of gravity. Particularly in general relativity, if we use this equation for the growth, we know that we can use this gamma here to fit the numerical result with this accuracy, which is very good. And then this value will be very different from the one that we will have for different kinds of theories of modified gravity, like the BGP model or theories based on the Ricci scalar. So the idea would be something like this. If we were able to constrain omega matter, we knew which with precision we can know the growth index, then measuring it up here or down here would tell us really what kind of theory of gravity is behind the generation.
So can I ask you something?
Yes.
So maybe you're going to tell us this later, but this is assuming that either you know you are going to be perturbation.
Yes, of course.
So, or if a speed up sound is large for dark energy, that's fine. If the speed up sound is zero for dark energy, what would be the value of gamma?
If the speed of sound is zero,
yeah.
But the speed of sound is zero, the value will be very close to this one.
Is that right? So if it's zero or one, it doesn't make a difference.
It makes a difference, but it's a small difference. This is what I will explain. Okay. But still, it's not as big as this one. So you cannot confuse. You cannot mess up the dark energy perturbations. I think, although this number here, you have to take it with a grain of salt because the understanding of the perturbations in this kind of model is not so clear.
So you have to write down the other equation.
Which other equation?
Dark energy perturbations.
Yeah, later. Later, there will be another equation which will be similar to this one. Instead of C, we'll have X for the dark energy. And then combine both of them, we will get a different formula for them. That's exactly what I meant.
The logic of this formula, though, is that it's observational that if you just take all these different models, they give you a growth factor of that form with different gammas, or is there a derivation that has to have this form?
No. This is just a phenomenological thing. I mean, it is based, if you want, you can plug this here and get an equation, for instance. And then you will see why that works so well. But the point is that, since I was saying before that the expansion history, you can get the same expansion history regardless of the theory of gravity that you have. Once you put that here, the only thing that will tell you what is giving you the growth is the index. Because you can have the same age for different theories of gravity. And the same age will give you the same evolution for omega matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's related to it. So you can write that as a function of age, the Hall factor. And then this is not telling you anything about what is the theory of gravity behind.
Right. I guess I can morally see why that's qualitatively the kind of formula you want, because it's telling you how if omega is 1, then nothing happens, and
yes.
If omega is bigger than 1, then you're more and more sensitive to it depending on what gamma is. Should I have some sort of beyond that qualitative intuition and understanding as to why that's the right answer to think about?
Not that I know of. I think they just use it because it works like that. This was proposed several years ago, and was refined by Linda to take this particular set. It was a little bit different in the beginning what people were using. But I think they just use it because the accuracy is very good. I don't know, maybe there's a good argument.
But in the other cases, like Evervon, I mean, it still works.
Well, it works. It works well if you put this value up. This is the idea. So the point is that this equation will not be valid anymore in the DGP or
FR. No, but in the DGP is part of the case, but right now it's clear to do the calculation.
Yeah.
So you know it goes. So
I think it works fine. I mean, the aim of this formula is precisely that, like, you should be able to use it in a wide variety of cases, because otherwise it's pointless. If it only works in general relativity, then it would be pointless.
Is it exactly true in general relativity?
No.
So it's all, in all of those cases, it's an approximation.
Yes, it's an approximation.
So is there a difference between the M and the C, omega sub C and omega?
Yeah, that I forgot to change. Yeah, because I think from the paper, I was using one convex. So, no, it's the same. Okay. In fact, M or C, both of them are matter. It doesn't really matter whether you take into account when you distinguish between color, matter, and range. Because it's just the big gravity part of your stuff.
Was it just your check that we're awake?
Okay. So, I told you already about this.
What's Q and BW?
This is brain rot. So, it's to DGP. It's for the DGP case. Yeah. Here is the 0.68.
Mm-hmm. And Q is F of R, or what?
And Q, I think, is. Yeah, that's it. Okay, so, but the problem is that it's not as simple as what this may suggest. Because if you take a sufficiently complicated dark energy again, you can mimic, for instance, in the case of EGP, you can mimic the growth factor that you will get. Just in general relativity. So if you forget about the lower two curves, the upper one here, this is just it's dark energy in general relativity for a particular value of the equation of the state. And these two here that are merged, the blue and the black one of them is obtained with a modified theory of gravity in GP model, and the other one is general relativity, but with an isotropic dark energy.
And this is the growth factor again that you're plotting.
It's a quantity that is related to the growth factor. It's not exactly the same as the previous effect before, but you can put one in correspondence to the other. So that's why the shape is not quite the same. But it's basically the growth factor.
What's the difference?
I think it includes here the velocity perturbation.
So this is the common ring density as opposed to the
amplitude. So this is the growth factor plus, so it's delta plus this delta that was different in 4 plus the other dimension of the relationship. I think it's, or we can check it.
Sorry for that. Anisotropic dark energy, you mean something that gives you an anisotropic stress?
It means that it has zero stress perturbation.
So the example of a piece of an hyperbola would give you that, whereas the top one would be contestants.
Yeah, so you can, you can think of it just as a term in the perturbation of the tensor, the stress energy tensor, which is a purely tensor part.
But there is no coupling with matter.
Not necessarily.
Because in FMR, there would be a coupling, a minimal coupling.
Yeah, but it's not tensor, I mean, it's the scale, we're talking about the scale around.
Sure.
Yeah. So it would be something like FMR.
But the FMR has an unminimal coupling.
But because it's not minimally coupled on you.
But you can have a minimally coupled dark energy which has an isotropic pressure.
I think so. It's in the perturbation.
Oh, just posit that's true.
Sorry,
how do you
get that if you're not with a scalar?
Yeah, not with a scalar.
Not with a scalar.
You could just say, you just have a fluid and say it's
true. Yeah, I'm not. thinking of any particular implementation, just field theory or just something. I don't know if it exists. Okay, so the problem is that it's not so clear whether we can use this formalism of the Lower factor to distinguish between dark energy and modified dark. And what is necessary to conclude that is that, as I was saying, you need this kind of shear stress perturbations and entropy perturbations, which is basically having a speed of sound different from one. And what happens is basically explained here. So, using observations, particular weak lengths in large scale structure data, we can constrain the gravitational potentials. That tells us basically how the matter and like energy perturbations relate to it. So, but these gravitational potentials can be obtained either in dark energy or in modified gravity. Any of the two can give us the same psi effect. So once we have measured these two things, we cannot really conclude which one of the two is the true explanation of the observation. However, if we assume one of them from the very beginning, then we can invite the procedure, and of course, we can constrain two. This is what I'm going to do. If I assume that what we have is dark energy, then we, perhaps using the growth factor, we can gain some information on the properties of dark energy. And from there, we can infer what kind of models can give this situation.
Can you say, what do you mean by dark energy? You just mean the fluid?
Some fluid which has an equation of a state which is sufficiently negative to give acceleration. But of course, some field models, like most quintessence models, you can include.
But that will be the constant now for you.
It will be a constant, but not necessarily. I mean, it will be a constant later when I will show you my results. But generically, it's not a constant. It's not really model for Kennedy, obviously.
But you assume some fixed equation that's relating pressure and density.
Yeah, I will do that later, but in general, it may not be that. And here is one.
It's not. It's in what replaces the equation of state. I mean, it's not even a well-defined theory if you don't have something.
What do you mean? If I don't have
if you don't have an equation of state.
No, I have an equation of state. I say W is a constant.
No, I know. That's a particular equation of state. But yes. In the more general case,
yes,
it's some other equation of state where W is a function of rho. Is that right?
Yes.
But not of anything else. Not of time, for example.
What's the difference?
Well, it could be, for instance, if it was a scalar field rolling around.
Yeah.
You can always parameterize P and rho. You figure out P and rho explicitly as function of time along a trajectory and take a ratio to find W, then witness would be thermodynamic. It's fine in the sense of a critical state. And it sounds like you're general enough to include the scalar field evolution if you want.
Yeah. Later I will constrain it to be constant. I just think of some relationship between the pressure and the energy, whatever it is.
So I think if W is a function of rho, then you wouldn't have entropy perturbations, which actually constrains the model significantly. But if generally W is not a function of rho for perturbations, for background, of course, you can say it's a function of rho for time or anything. But for perturbations, it's very constraining to assume it's a function of rho. And usually that's not the case. Usually you have entropy perturbations, like for quantum systems. Any field model.
Yeah. Sorry to keep interrupting, but what does it mean that we could be different for the background and for perturbation? Shouldn't there just be one equation of state?
The equation of state is the same the equation of state is only related to the background part. But the speed of sound of the perturbation will depend on what is this equation of state.
That's I don't think that's generally true. The speed of sound can be said independent of the equation of state.
Yeah, well, it depends on the model. Mm-hmm. So here it is. This is speed of sound. It can be basically seen as how this pressure perturbation propagates in a medium, like any other thing. So if the perturbations are adiabatic, then there is the relationship between the equation of state and the speed of sound. then here one is the equation. But in general, you can have this entropy perturbation. It's actually what we measure is the difference between the theoretic case and the more general one. So you're saying this.
Well, what is the more general? What's the physics behind the more general? Well, if it's not adiabatic, that usually means there's heat flow going on.
The physics is that you try to be as more general as you can. And just using linear perturbation theory, nothing is telling you. This is like, this plays the role of the equation of a state at the perturbation. So, in the same way that the equation of a state parameterizes our ignorance of what is the nature of dark energy at the background level, this speed of sound is telling us how the perturbation affects.
It's hard to understand why the perturbation would have a different equation of state than the background. Mm-hmm. Unless it's something, like in air, there's adiabatic perturbations and there's isothermal and so on, and it depends on the wavelength.
But
because we understand the process of heat flow in air.
But I think you have two fluids, for instance.
You can't have sort of infinite freedom to do anything you like.
Not infinite, but
then why do you start with this formula?
I mean, I'm telling you there are cases, for instance, if you have two fluids, one of them with an equation of a state and another one with a different one, both are perfect fluids, and you put them together and you want to describe both of them with a single equation of a state, as a single fluid, then you will have this kind of perturbation. So imagine that your dark energy is made of two components.
Yeah, then you should have two densities, two velocity fields.
Yeah, you can either describe it in this way or with a single velocity, which will not be any
way. So I think you're both right. One thing is this is not necessarily a complete picture. You'll have to make extra assumptions to close the equations. But in general, you have entropy perturbations and adiabatic perturbations, and you may not be able to close the equation just like that. But then if you assume, for example, that something is constant, you make further assumptions to be able to close the equations. But it's really just the fact that pressure is not necessarily a function of density, it could be a function of other things.
Yeah, even in a single field system, just because a single field has two solutions, one of those solutions is the adiabatic, and the other one can act like an isogeometry as well. So, for example, in KS, it's what those. You don't get this.
Yeah, this is what I was.
You don't get
going to say. I was just giving my example.
So it's just that the fluid, the degrees of freedom counted by the fluid, are not as many as the degrees of freedom, say, of scalar field.
No.
And so there are really extra degrees of freedom there. It's the isogeometry.
But then you would think that there's not one size fits all. That would describe all these different.
Well, this is just a coarse-grained description of whatever, right?
That's a lot of freedom.
So these are the things that are relevant for the gravitational growth. So
yes.
That's why you're following these things.
Yeah. That's why. You have to think of this CS as the equation of a state for the perturbations. So that's the idea. The point is that generally this is gauge dependent, and the adiabatic one and the entropy perturbation are not. What you do to study it and make sure that you're not seeing a gauge artifact in your equation is moving to a frame in which your fluid is attracted. This is what I do here. This is the mean of this hat. And in that way, you can relate the pressure in any frame to the frame in which the fluid is attracted to this equation. This theta here is the velocity perturbation. Energy momentum tension, which will appear later in the equation for the perturbations of dark energy. And this is maybe kind of answer to your question, some examples why you may have these entropy perturbations. For instance, if you have standard matter and radiation, the speed of sound is basically the equation of the state of these two cases. Then in quintessence, if the field is minimally coupled, speed of sound is speed of light. In K-essence, as you were saying, things start to change. You have this model, for instance, when the speed of sound is close to very large values to infinity. Who's
speaking? Has school time.
Okay. Sorry. two fields, a gas of strings, and this Chaplin gas. I don't know how to pronounce this one here. So the bottom line is that the perturbations in the dark energy component can be important if the speed of some is significantly different from one. This is what I will try to test later. Right now, the speed of some is basically unconstrained. This is the only, the most stringent constraint I have found in the literature is this one. But this relies on assuming a value of the equation of a state of dark energy. This range of values, many of them are basically ruled out today. So all the other constraints on the speed of some of that can be that I have seen basically look like this.
The previous thing we had to be below the line, is that the...
Yeah, so here it is, I mean, it is this region here which is leading to this upper bound on the speed of some.
It's about sigma, two sigma.
Yes, exactly. It's one sigma, two sigma, three. Oh. Sorry?
For particular markers?
No, this is for a generic kinetic component for the speed of sound and the equation of the state of constant. This comes from the CMD.
Oh, that
really
comes.
Yeah, well, okay, so that's a particular one.
And I mean, for example, quantum models
are. Ah, you mean this value?
I think this is wrong. I remember this. Because all these caps should go to infinity at W goes to minus 1.
Yeah.
And the fact that the lower one doesn't go to infinity is there something wrong there.
What I was saying is that if you remember the first product I had with the wire, just to consideration to CMB and supernova data, these large values of W are very far away from what you measure. So if you restrict yourself to this region here, you know, from I don't know, minus 0.7 or whatever, then obviously there's no constraint on this field. So, and unless you take this thing very close to zero, then there is no constraint. That's it.
And the logic of this bound is what would be going wrong if you did not satisfy this bound? What would be changing in the CMB?
I think the speed of sound basically is affecting the lowest multiples.
Is it somehow changing the sound horizon?
No, I think this one is simply just trying to see what is the best fitting value of speed. It's not what is going wrong. You take the CMB, you make a fit.
I guess I'm asking why does C large change the CMB at all? What's the
physics?
Yeah.
Where is the ISR effect?
So it just means that the things flow faster, and so the sound horizon is different.
Yeah, so.
And do they assume that C sub A was, are there any non-adiabatic
reasons
for the analysis for the bound?
Here they just take a constant.
But in your previous thing, you had C of C sub A and C sub S.
This is, well, but it doesn't really matter what is the origin of this number here. This is the generic speech. That's not.
Okay, so C sub A is W.
Here in this case, since W is a constant. So this term is C.
Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
C sub A is basically constant. So they are not correlated. So they are not related to sub A.
They cannot be because one is negative, the other is negative.
Yeah.
But I want to emphasize that this is only correct if W is we measure it to be a large value. If W is close to minus 1, you cannot really put a constraint.
Yeah, yeah. So this is basically
this is probably more likely.
And there are many other flaws that we've seen different before. There's three concluding.
Yeah. So the previous one is just wrong.
And the line I think, what is the more solid line in the
middle? I think it's 1, 2, 3.
This thing should go up here as well.
Yes. It's going up.
Yeah. I think so. But that's perhaps because they didn't make the whole range. I don't know why, but of course.
Well, it doesn't bother where it's 1 minus 1.
the plot cuts off.
This is 0.9, right? So they probably cut it. Of course, I mean, the conclusion is that there's no constraint. Right. Okay, because the data is very important. You are dealing with perturbations, and you have to have very precise data to process. But this is just what I was saying before. So the speed of sound, for instance, can affect the lowest multiples of the CMB and mimic the effect of other physics like Ryan spectral index.
So can you tell us which curve is which?
So the black one is, I think, is speed of sound equal to 1. Then as you go down, as you go decreasing the speed of sound, you decrease the power. Power spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's how it is. Mm-hmm. And it can also affect the growth of the matter perturbation. And this is what we see in this plot. Again, the black curve here is the one that you will have for speed of sound equal to 1. As you go decreasing the speed of sound, you have different growths. The blue one on top is basically for speed of sound, very small. I think 10 to the minus 4, so basically, you take something like 10 to the minus 6 or something like that, you get the same result. So there is this range of variance on the growth. And this is what I would like to know, if it's possible to see using data. So when you have these black energy perturbations from the speed of sound, the equation that gives you the evolution of the perturbations in the matter component gets a new part. Remember, this was 0 before. And we have a similar equation for the black energy component.
What's theta again? Is it the theta something to do
with it? It's the perturbation on the velocity of the dark energy in this case. So you can perturb a perfect fluid in three different ways, right? You can put these color perturbations, vector ones, threshold ones. This is the vector part.
So it's definition, there must be some sort of condition.
This is well, not exactly. Okay. So this is sorry. So you take the time space component like ti 0 of the grid. You perturb that part. This is what gives you the perturbation.
Can you write just where the indices go? I'm thinking of.
I think
it's just the scalar part of velocity.
Yeah,
B is correct. It's just divergence of velocity.
So it's the part which you're working on in free space. So delta V is gradient of theta.
So this theta, I think there's a I here from that sky, EI. And this EI is related to delta EI 0, it's proportional to this.
So that's why there's the one over k squared in there. So you're only dividing by 1k. You contract of k and divide by k squared.
Yeah. When you go to Fourier space, you get this k. Very. So, okay. Now what is important to this is, I said you get another equation for the perturbations. And you can solve this, and the gravitational potentials don't appear. So you just put in initial conditions for the deltas without having to go through the gravity part, you get the solution of the equation. And it's also very important that if you assume that there is dark energy and it's not a cosmological constant in general, these perturbations must be there for consistency, because even if you put them to zero, at some point, like an initial condition, they will be generated by equations on later times. Because, yes.
I'm trying to, with the first bullet point there,
yeah.
What was the statement? The statement was that?
The statement is that the gravitational potentials don't appear in this equation because I'm working in secret. think I can write the equations in this compact form if I work in Newtonian gauge chemistry. That's the stage.
Well, that's not very compact because there's another
not?
Equation for delta x.
Another equation? I'm sorry. These are the equations.
This is the compact equation.
Yeah.
Okay.
It could be worse. it's compact in the sense that the only thing you have is the delta c and the delta x, and all the rest are the background evolution given by h and this f here, and the parameters of the model.
Okay.
Of the model. So you don't see the gravitational potentials. That's why I say it's compact. Of course, it's not that compact. And the second point, which is the important one really, is that the perturbations are there. Even if you put them to zero sometimes. Because you cannot transform this system of equations. You cannot reduce it to this one just by setting W equal to 1, CS equal to 1. If you give arbitrary values to W and to CS, you impose that this must be this, and the delta x here must be zero at any time, you will see that it's impossible to satisfy and to find a solution of the equations. So in general, if dark energy is not a cosmological constant, then we have these dark energy perturbations and we have to see what is the effect. Okay, so this is basically the main point of the work. Since they have to be there, it's worth to have a look at them and see what can be the effect of this. Okay. And then, if you remember, this was the definition of the growth index. And just reordering the terms here in the equation, we can get gamma, once we have the solution for that here. So we solve numerically these equations, and we put the solution in here, and we get gamma, which is the growth index that was here, was assumed to be a constant in the beginning, in order the fitting formula depended only on the question of the state of that kind. We see that in general the things are a bit more complicated because it depends on all these variables here. So it's scale dependent, which is really an artifact of working on Fourier space. It depends not only on the question of the state of dark energy, but also on the dark matter abundance, the speed of sound, and on the rest. Okay.
Why is there a hat on the speed of sound?
This is because this was what I was commenting in here, that we want to consider the gauge dependent speed of sound. So we move to a frame in which this value does not depend on the gauge.
So it's definitely divided by delta rho in the co-moving frame of dark energy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so
the venti phi is there.
Exactly. That's it. So you can compare the results to people that will be working in a different setup to use the same quantity. Because this VCS in general is gauge dependent. Once you do this transformation, you're using a variable that is not. And we see here in this plot that basically is the main result. What is the dependence of the growth index for a particular recipe on the speed of sound and the value of the question of a state? So we see that if we deviate sufficiently for the cosmological constant case, the difference between having speed of sound equal to 1 or close to 0 can be quite large. The point is whether this can be measured or not. Here, the blue and the red curves are two different values of the scale.
So, what's the K dependence?
So, this is for 0.05, the red ones, and the blue ones are for in a bit larger value of K. But in the two limits, so the speed of sound is either 0 or 1. And scale dependencies. So we have seen that we have different theories of gravity, and each of them will give us a different prediction for gamma. But if we have a very complicated dark energy component with these serious stress perturbations or experience on perturbations, and we cannot distinguish the two. However, we can use gamma to try to infer properties of dark energy if we assume that it is dark energy which is causing this aberration. Right now, the data that we have on the growth index, sorry, the measurements that we can, estimations that we can do on the growth index using current data are very poor. But the accuracy of the future experiments is of this order, which is basically at 7%. And we have seen in this plot that basically this width here is comparable to that. So there is a hope that if dark energy has an equation of a state which is different enough from minus one, and there is a speed of sound different from one, then we might be able to see the effect on growth index. Solving the equations analytically is not possible in Japan, so instead of that we try to fit the gamma with a formula which depends on all these parameters. As you can imagine, that's quite complicated because there are many variables. It's difficult even to figure out to see in space how many. I cannot think in more than two dimensions, so it's really complicated to see what is the dependence on.
It must be tough that you live in Florida, I guess.
That's true. But still, it's possible to write an equation for gamma using this thing here. And then you can guess a little bit how it goes, the dependence on each of these variables. And using that, and using this set of assumptions here, as I said before, we take constant omega and speed of sound, we take this range of k's, which is the one in which we have large scale structure data. We assume that there is no shear perturbations, and then we consider this range of residues from the value in which case matter. Sorry, but this is not from where there is a great equality between the matter and the components up to now. We take these adiabatic initial conditions because it's consistent with the fact that in matter domination the solution goes like this. Then you can infer a formula that is quite complicated for gamma. We're not going into details, but basically the bottom line is that you can fit gamma with a very good precision.
Your slide said where rho, c was equal to rho x equals half. Did you mean x or?
No, I meant r. Not x, that's a type. Okay. So we made a fit from the matter radiation equality up on that range of residues. So the dependence on the residues goes like this. This is something that can be checked either numerically or can be seen almost analytically. Then the dependence of the speed of sound is quite complicated, and this is a phenomenological thing if you want to find useful.
Why is it up to the base?
Well, you can. You can make any other plot. We took this one because for making the plots, you can use by an order of magnitude C, and this was you can take a natural log.
But I guess it's
but where does this come from? You can try to see it from the equations here, and it's quite long computations, and you can see that using this kind of thing you can reduce the error that you make on the field. This is something that we just took because it works well.
What happens to W?
What do you mean W?
I mean, that the gamma dependent on W.
Yeah, the dependence on W is quite complicated. because, first of all, so this is a dependence on A, the first line, which is basically this thing here. Mm-hmm. And then this gamma at equality, the matter radiation equality, goes like this, and also the present time. And this H, R, and F are what are giving you the dependence of that. And these three functions are polynomials. So it's not very clear how it works. But I will show you a plot later in which I will show you what is. What happens is that I will show you later.
How does the pure cosmological constant fit into this scheme?
In the pure cosmological constant case, gamma will be 0.55.
But what happens to CS? Yes. What do you call CS?
CS is what?
CS hat doesn't make any sense.
Hat the hat one.
Because if there is no perturbation, then
yeah,
there is no spin off.
Okay, so.
So it just doesn't fit into this at all, is it?
I go back very fast. No, I mean if you take no, but in the limit in which CS goes to one, you recover the standard case.
That's a quintessence.
Yeah. It's not the cosmological constant, but the omega that you will, sorry, the gamma that you will get. So there was this fitting formula here.
Yeah,
when you take omega equal to 1, sorry, minus 1, then you get 0.2. And it's not obvious to see it in the other one that I was showing you
before. Is the same in CS, CSF just doesn't have any. It's sort of parameterizing things with it, and then one of the most natural theories doesn't.
Well, the point is that
there's something strange.
How do you define delta p in that case?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Okay. I think in the limit in which the speed of sound goes to one, you will recover what is cosmology.
But it's sort of a trivial limit because CS squared is always multiplied by delta rho, so the lambda was no degree of freedom, so the delta of that degree of freedom is zero, so it doesn't matter what CS is.
Yes, you don't really see it.
Because it's always multiplied by zero.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if you try and fit things with these parameters, are you actually excluding the case of just plain cosmological constant, or is it somewhere in this range?
If you put value equal to minus 1, then you will get the result of one.
Yeah, I mean, it should be the limit of these minus 1 and the amplitude of perturbations goes to 0.
So, okay, so the delta x will disappear.
Will go to 0.
And that will not depend on what value of CS you put. But you have to set omega to minus 1. What is true is that in the code that we wrote, when you put W equal to minus 1, there are some divergences that appear. Some millimeters, things like that. So we usually remember with W equal to minus 1, that's 0.9999.
When you do that, it's approaching what you expected to happen.
Okay, so this is how it looks like. And the problem with this, of course, is that it is so complicated that the practical use of this when you're trying to use data is very limited. Because there are so many variables that you cannot really identify what is playing what role here. But the good thing is that the fit that we get is much smaller than the accuracy forecasts for the future experiments. So maybe if we were able to reduce this a little bit, we could be able to pinpoint speed of sound in the one. There are kind of perturbations in the future. Okay. And this is, for instance, the effect of K, the moving scale, gamma. That's basically a shift of the speed of sound for a particular reason. That's because of this. And this plot here is just to show the formula fits very well. I just chose several values of the parameters. And the red curves are the numerically sorted, the blue ones are the fit.
So here, W went to minus, the last number of W, right? The minus 0.95, say?
Mm-hmm. Sorry,
so in the curly brackets, the last number of W?
Yes.
So that would become just a straight horizontal line that W were minus 1, like 0.558 probably, or 0.5.
Well, it's actually here.
Okay.
It's 0.547, I think, there is
whatever it was on the other side. Yeah.
And then the effect of W, it's, well, it not only changes the width, the vertical width, if you want, or the amplitude of this curve, but for the other, it also stretches the curve. That's how W is. It's complicated. So just to conclude, so I think perhaps this is the most important idea to keep in mind, that the Kennedy perturbations are needed for consistency. If the Kennedy is not just a cosmological constant, this is the idea that it's not so clear whether you can distinguish between the Kennedy and modified IQ's perturbations. Then the growth index will depend on all these parameters. And finally, that perhaps in the future, we might be able to identify a speed of sound in the dark energy if we are able to describe the growth with a good enough function in order to comply with these skills of observations. That's it.
Questions for Guillermo?
You probably said this already, but what's the observational statement for gamma now? Is there any information on what it is?
It's not as unconstrained as the speed of sound. You see the plots people have run, the error bars huge.
So it's like point. It's consistent with 0.55, but it's
And I don't
10?
Even know if I don't even remember if the DGP node, for instance, if you remember that has gamma which was 0.60 something. I don't even know if that is true now.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is, it's just very mildly. So the error is quite large. It's not centered around 0.55. There was a plot here in the beginning. This one. This would be the estimated error, but for forecasts, it's not the one that we have now. And I think that right now it's comparable to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not convinced. Sure.
But you could rule out one, two or something.
Yes, that big a problem. But I don't even know of any theory that would give you such a huge growth. But maybe taking an omega equal to something smaller than minus one, or that would make it, the perturbations grow like crazy, perhaps. Not in the most systematic.
Which are the observations on which is there these?
There are different, there's variant acoustic oscillations.
But variant acoustic oscillation doesn't measure growth, it's a geometric force.
That's a massive.
No. Well, I mean, the way it's usually described, it just describes the geometric force. It's just the position in the K space depends on distance.
Okay. I think, I thought there was a problem because they were using it somehow, maybe.
Yeah.
Like mapping cones.
Maybe use the other. There is something curious about Banner acoustic oscillator. Said I think the amplitude doesn't quite match because it's true, but the amplitude is never measured very accurately. It's really the position of the peak that's the big strong constant that out my peaks.
Not so weak tension, I think you can measure it. And data on the basically that there was so these things here, but don't really ask me the details because, to be honest, I don't know.
Because recently, the newspapers just in the last couple of weeks said there was a measurement of numbers of clusters or something, which is supposed to be support for the existence of dark energy. So that must be translatable into a statement about gamma, is it?
I'm sure it's gamma and not W.
Maybe it's W.
It's X-ray cluster count. It's just the number of clusters. And well, the problem
how
is...
How does it translate exactly? So you...
The problem of translating that into that this G or gamma is that it's a nonlinear structure. So then in modified theories of gravity, there is no way to translate linear growth to nonlinear structures. But in lambda CDM, there is a way to relate one to the other. But it's people often make this mistake that that means you can measure from these nonlinear structures, you can measure growth. Linear growth, but you cannot really, because nonlinear structure formation would be very different modified theories of gravity. So.
How about something more vanilla, like his dark energy, which has W with constant or a quintessence mark or something?
That's probably easy, but if a speed up sound isn't very small, then maybe there is a simple thing. I don't know.
No, if they would be, if gamma is larger, you start forming nonlinear structure earlier, then
maybe, I'm not sure if it's smaller or large, but then I think there must be a constant. If make with some assumption, as you're saying, there could it would be a relation between what that X-ray cluster gives you a gamma. I don't know how it's probably the errors would be.
So X-ray clusters means using them as kind of markers to track matter density?
The larger the amplitude of fluctuations, the more X-ray clusters you make.
Not the distribution, just but the absolute count. How many you see above the threshold of amplitude, which tells you something about the number of clusters that have ever been arisen in our. They're just a really clean thing to count. You don't get X-rays from any.
Was that also kind of just the volume? Or sort of, does this look like
you have to make some. You have to make some calculations or assumptions about dimming.
Uh-huh. But in the newspapers, when they claim they're seeing dark energy, is that because they're just saying that the way that things go with redshift is consistent with the acceleration of the universe? Or is there,
I think they were confirming lambda. Or
I'm not saying anything about how clusters form.
No, it's just.
But I think there is a lot of hidden assumption there. So.
Yeah.
So if all those assumptions are correct, then how the growth of a structure would be related to how many clusters you see. Okay, any more questions? No? Okay, let's thank you again.